You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. I'm Wes Goldberg with David Ramil, and we've got a great show for you today. We'll present our biggest questions that we have for the second half of the season. We'll talk about Kyrie Irving's first big test since his return. But we'll start in Indiana, where the Pacers beat the 76ers 101-95, leaped the Sixers for the fifth spot in the Eastern Conference. It's a big win for the Pacers, no doubt. And they also get Victor Oladipo back at the end of this month. David, are you more impressed by the Pacers or disappointed by what the Sixers have done so far this season?
Well, I think we already assumed that the Sixers would have some trouble meshing, you know, the talent they had. They lost Jimmy Butler, obviously, and it was going to be difficult for them to make up for the loss of that kind of talent. And the fact that Jimmy does so many things so well, but not only that, they're also trying to incorporate Al Horford, and he struggled somewhat over the course of the season. So I wasn't all that surprised by the Sixers. I still think that they're going to be a strong team come playoff time, but during the regular season, we knew they would have their ups and downs. But the fact that Indiana is able to win as much as they have, they've been so consistently good. I mean, look, they've been consistently good for years now, and I think obviously everybody knows that they've made the playoffs a number of times despite the roster turnover over the years. They've still managed to always make the playoffs. They're playing defense at such a high level. But even with Brogdon out in and out of the lineup, with him, you know, occasionally playing very well when he is in the lineup, and without Oladipo, as you mentioned, the fact that they're able to win at this level and as consistently as they have, that they've been able to get so much out of Domantas Sabonis, and that everybody is finding a way to contribute. T.J. Warren, who obviously had struggled earlier in his career in Phoenix, Jeremy Lamb is a major contributor there, the Holiday brothers. They've got all these different players, none of which had really produced much outside of Indiana, and somehow Nate McMillan, who always seems to be a coach that gets the most out of his players and never gets any kind of publicity for it, has done a fantastic job of getting them to mesh well, to play defense at a high level, and to be able to score just enough to knock over some pretty good opponents in the process.
Look, I don't disagree with anything you said, and I appreciate you taking the optimistic approach here, but I'm actually way more disappointed about what the 76ers have done. I mean, the Pacers, yeah, it's fine. They're going to be a fifth seed probably in the Eastern Conference. They are currently holding that spot. But what are they really going to do in the postseason? I don't really think that they're going to do anything. It just seems like very inconsequential to me. Where the Sixers felt like a team that could push the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, there was a lot of people picking the Sixers, myself included, to go to the NBA Finals. And they just don't seem to be anywhere close to that. And look, I know that they were without Joel Embiid Monday night. They're 1-2 now without Joel Embiid. Brett Brown canceled shoot-around so that he could just figure out what to do in a world without Joel Embiid, and it didn't really help. Maybe they should have done shoot-around. I don't know, but it does sort of feel like this is just not working. And when Josh Richardson, who is coming off of a Player of the Week award, he scored, I think, 17 points in that fourth quarter to keep them in it. And, you know, you and I like Josh Richardson. Nothing against Josh Richardson. But if he's your closer when you don't have Joel Embiid in there, and when he's oftentimes been their closer even when they have Joel Embiid because he's the guy that could shoot from the perimeter, like, why did you trade for Tobias Harris? What is the deal with Ben Simmons? Why can't Ben Simmons all of a sudden get to the rim when he needs to? And he had a decent game, but he's not a closer. And, you know, they've got all these pieces, and yet you've got to rely on the guy that you basically traded Jimmy Butler for. And I think they're really missing that Jimmy Butler piece. And, you know, the Miami Heat obviously have Jimmy Butler, and they're thriving with him. And now they don't have that closer, and none of these young guys, Embiid or Ben Simmons, have really stepped up in that absence. And it's really concerning, and it just feels like to me that this thing is broken. And I don't know how they come back from that.
Well, it just seems like they're built on the idea that they can defend at such a high level and that'll be enough for them to win games, that they'll find enough scoring from Harris or Richardson or Embiid in particular, that it'll be enough to compensate for Ben Simmons' lack of offense, you know, the offense he does provide. But they're not particularly deep also. They're very top-heavy as far as talent is concerned, and that could be an issue. I think they're also looking at making some changes later in the season where they're picking up acquiring a prospect or somebody who can contribute at least to some degree via trade. I don't think they have much to offer as far as trade packages are concerned, but I know that they're looking to make some kind of an upgrade there at some point in the season. But, you know, I mean, with Philadelphia, I don't know. I still have faith that they're going to be able to turn it around. I don't think that they're broken. I think that they're struggling. I think that they're still good enough, and I think we had these same questions about this team last year. And obviously, yes, they did have Butler, but I think they're still going to be good enough when the time comes. My biggest concern on that roster, honestly, is Horford. The fact that he hasn't – it seems like age has caught up to him, that his role has been so minimized that he's not able to have the same kind of impact that he did in Boston. And, you know, if they don't get something out of him regularly, what's his – point? You know, what's the point of having Al Horford on your team and getting paid as much as he is? I don't think that they're looking to move him. I know Sixers fans are probably, you know, eager at the opportunity to try to move Al Horford, but would they get in exchange for him? I'm not sure exactly what that might be.
It's something that they probably should explore, though, right? And they've got, we know Elton Brand will shake things up in the middle of the year. He made the Jimmy Butler move in the middle of last year. We know he's willing to do something like that. They've got to figure something out. I mean, you said you're not that worried about them, but where do they rank in the Eastern Conference? Like, or where, I guess, do you project them to be by, you know, playoff time as far as your confidence of getting out of the East?
I think they could be somewhere in the top four, maybe even in a top three seed. I still think that they have enough to turn it around there, and I'm not sure Miami's entering a phase now where they're already struggling against some 500 teams. They have a tougher schedule up ahead there, and I think their lack of overall talent, if they don't acquire somebody via trade or something like that, I'm not sure that they're going to be able to be as consistently good as they have been earlier in the season. I think they're relying so much on Jimmy Butler, whose offense has struggled incredibly over the last few weeks in Miami. So I still think that Philadelphia is top-heavy enough in talent where they can make moves there. They can actually go deep in the playoffs and you know, again, with their stifling defense, if they're able to turn things around and just tighten it up just a little bit, I think that they'll be good enough to, they can at least challenge for the Eastern Conference title and maybe even advance to the finals.
Let's get to some of the other scores from last night really quickly. The New Orleans Pelicans beat the Detroit Pistons 117-110. Jahlil Okafor scored 25 points and 14 rebounds in the game. The Boston Celtics beat the Bulls. Jason Tatum, 21 points and 6 rebounds. Jaylen Brown added 19 points. The Celtics beat the Bulls 113-101. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 20 points and 20 rebounds and 10 assists. A 2020 triple-double as the Thunder beat the Timberwolves 117-104. Damian Lillard scores 30 points as the Trailblazers beat the Hornets 115-112. Nikola Vucevic has 26 points to lead the Magic over the Kings 114-112. And LeBron James scores 31 points, most of which came in the fourth quarter as the Lakers beat the Cavaliers 128-99. Coming up, the main thing that the Lakers need to do to make the most of their season. Kyrie Irving will face the Jazz tonight, who have won their last 9 games. We'll talk about that later on. But David, we're halfway through the season now. What is your biggest question for the next half of the regular season?
Well, I think we're looking at this team, you know, obviously we talked about in the first segment, whether or not Philadelphia might be a legitimate contender, whether or not they have so many glaring issues. And then we look at Milwaukee's record. We look at what the Los Angeles Lakers have been able to do. And even the Clippers, who I think a lot of people, myself included, thought would be able to represent the Western Conference in the title match. I think we're starting to see the Lakers and the Bucks kind of pull ahead there. And it feels a little too similar to what we've seen before last season, over the last 4 years, when it was obviously going to be a collision course between the Cavaliers in the East and the Warriors in the West. And even before that, when you looked at Miami representing the East for 4 straight years, it just seems a little too similar. I want to know whether or not there are other teams out there, whether in the East and West, that could emerge as legitimate contenders. Like, obviously, there are a number of teams that are pretty good, you know, Utah being one of them, as you mentioned. The Clippers, I think, are still pretty good. The Sixers, et cetera. Even the Heat, to some degree. Maybe even the Rockets, although I think they're kind of, you know, they're one of those teams where you have a lot of questions about. But do you see them as legitimate contenders? And that's the question for me, is whether or not any of these teams can kind of solidify their standing a little bit, continue to tighten things up significantly enough so that they can become legitimate contenders in the season. Otherwise, it just feels like the same two-man race that's been for a number of years during this past decade.
Yeah, I think there might be some noise to be made in the postseason, but I don't know when it comes down to it that we're going to be shocked by who is actually participating in the NBA Finals. You know, I've been bullish on the Lakers since they got Anthony Davis. They are proving to be the best team in the Western Conference. The Clippers are looking like they probably need to make a trade or some sort of move to sort of fix that roster, add a ball handle or something like that. Houston, you mentioned that their problems. Utah, you know, I've never been a believer in, much to our boss's chagrin. I just don't think that they're an actual finals contender, as nice as their little 9-game win streak has been. And same goes for the Denver Nuggets. I just don't think that they have enough. The East, to me, is what's really interesting as far as who comes out. Like, Milwaukee is the best team in the Eastern Conference. It's not close. But the Eastern Conference is interesting in that a lot of the matchups, I think, are going to determine who ends up in the Eastern Conference Finals and who maybe ultimately ends up in the NBA Finals. I know that I just spent an entire segment talking about how I am really worried about the 76ers, but you put the 76ers in front of Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks, and that's a problem for Milwaukee, right? And then you kind of go down the list of, all right, well, who would give Philadelphia problems? I think Boston would be a nightmare matchup for them. And you can kind of find those matchups throughout, and depending on how these seedings play out, it could be a really interesting playoffs where we have some upsets just based on the fact that the matchup might not be good for the favorite in that series. So, yeah, I'm wondering if we're going to see an actual contender come out, but maybe you're right. Maybe it is just kind of the guys that we're used to seeing. James Harden, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard in the West, and just sort of the guys we expect in the East. So I'm not sure if an actual contender is going to come out of either conference.
Would it be a disappointing final if the Lakers managed to maintain their dominance and you know, they advance to all the way to the finals, and then somehow Milwaukee's upset by a team that you don't expect, either a Boston or Miami or maybe even a Toronto, who knows? If one of those teams manages to advance out of the East to represent the conference in the finals, would that seem like a disappointment? You know, it's not a powerhouse like Milwaukee or even a strong favorite like Philadelphia with their incredible top-end talent?
No, I don't think so, because as long as you have LeBron James in the finals, I think it'll be interesting. I mean, it would be really great to see LeBron and Giannis go head-to-head, right? I mean, that would be
sure.
That would be the headliner. But, you know, LeBron against the Celtics in the finals, we've never had that, especially with the Lakers and the Celtics. I mean, that would be really interesting to me. And then, of course, LeBron versus the Heat in the finals. I mean, the storylines for that would be incredible. The team that he won his first championship with and probably should have never left in the first place. Yeah, coming in with the takes right now. My big question is, can the Lakers stay healthy enough to get there? LeBron James came back from, you know, cold-like symptoms on Monday night, had that great game. But Anthony Davis has missed the last three games with an injury to his butt, basically. And the Lakers went all in on that duo, and without either of them, the Lakers are, I think, only average. Now, I know that they've won impressively against the Mavericks and the Thunder. They won Monday night, too, but I'm not, just because of, just a three-game sample size doesn't do it enough for me. I think they need to make sure that, obviously, they're going to be healthy for the playoffs. They're obviously better when Anthony Davis is in there, but I think the seeding is going to be important for them. But moreover, I do think that they need to manage these guys. They've been running LeBron James and Anthony Davis quite a bit, and I know that LeBron James has been load management averse this season, but they've got to think for the long view here that it's a championship or bust season, and they need to be as healthy as possible going into the postseason. And I'd be a little worried about it if I were the Lakers right now.
Yeah, it's interesting that he's taken such a strong attitude against load management. It seems like, at least to my recollection, it's been something that he's adopted in the past. He's never quite had a problem with it. And he's always maintained, like back to his Miami days and, of course, when they were contending in Cleveland as well, that the regular season standings don't matter as much. It seems like that's not the case now. He wants to be dominant in Los Angeles. He wants to be the first seed. And then as a result, it's taxing this team in a way that they probably shouldn't be. That, you know, they should be looking to, as you said, a bigger picture. It's about winning a title. I'm not sure I'm concerned about their health issues. I think they can manage it a little bit better. And if that's the case, then obviously they're still the favorites to win the title there. I wonder if if Frank Vogel feels comfortable in his first year as a Lakers head coach telling LeBron, who's taken this public stand for whatever reason against load management, hey, I need you to rest because, you know what, I need you in May. I don't need you in February or March, but these games don't matter. And when it looks like they're going to be a top four seed in the league,
yeah,
they're going to have home court advantage. I think they can still beat any of those teams there.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, even if the Clippers were to somehow go grab the one seed or a higher seed than the Lakers, I think even any series between the Clippers and the Lakers would still be a home court advantage for the Lakers, even if the Clippers were, quote unquote, the higher seed.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you look at the, we know that LeBron James studies the game closely, and you look at who's gotten out of the West these last couple of years. I mean, obviously it's been the Warriors, but you think last year the Warriors had the one seed. Well, they wanted to go get that one seed because 2 years ago, Houston won 65 games and grabbed the one seed and pushed them in the conference finals in a way that I don't think that they could have done had the Warriors been the one seed, had the Warriors had home court advantage. And, you know, as competitive as the West is, I think LeBron sees that home court advantage as something more important than it was when he was in the Eastern Conference, for example. But still, I think that the Lakers are good enough such that they can beat any team in the Western Conference, as long as, to me, health would be more important than just playing in Los Angeles, you know, playing at Staples. So that's just the one question I have is, because that situation is so precarious, that team is so much built around LeBron and Anthony Davis, and without any of them, I mean, I don't know that team is better than last year's team necessarily, right? If you take Anthony Davis out of the equation, and you look at LeBron's supporting cast, is that better than last year? Like, I don't know. So that's to me the main concern.
Yeah, I have to agree there. I mean, they've done a good job of assembling veterans that know how to fit alongside a guy like LeBron, and of course compliment Anthony Davis as well. But I don't know that they're so superior in talent than the last year's roster was.
Coming up, does Kyrie Irving's return solidify the Nets as a playoff team? In his second game back after missing 26 games with a right shoulder injury, Kyrie Irving and the Nets will host the Utah Jazz on Tuesday night. Though Irving was impressive in his return against the Hawks, the Jazz are not the Hawks, David. They have won 9 straight games as they've climbed to third place in the West. What are you watching for in this game?
I want to see whether or not Irving is a seamless fit there. I think there's always concerns about a player like Kyrie Irving who does well. He is such a force on offense in particular, where he dominates the ball. He creates so much of the offense for himself and then secondarily for others. They've managed to be an okay team without him. They've had some key contributions from guys like Spencer Dinwiddie, et cetera. And I wonder whether or not Irving's going to be able to fit seamlessly in with his team because, you know, we're starting to see that Boston can be very good without him. And I think that's the concern for Nets fans is whether or not Irving's going to be the kind of presence that disrupts the success they've had. It sucks for Utah, and I'm sure a lot of Jazz fans probably point to this pretty regularly, that as well as they're playing, that even against, you know, a team like the Nets, they're not the story here. It's about Irving and how he fits in with his team and how Brooklyn can contribute, you know, can continue to play at a high level once they incorporate Irving. It's not about the Jazz and then the fact that they're playing at a pretty high level themselves. But I think the story there is how Irving continues to stay healthy, whether or not he's learned anything from his time away there about how to play with these new teammates. Because that's another thing, too, is that we're forgetting that he's trying to fit into a new team for the most part here because he's not comfortable. We saw him struggle in that role when he was in Boston. And of course, by the end of his tenure there, things were toxic. And I don't think that was much of a surprise for maybe, you know, some of his other teammates in Cleveland, but Boston fans are happy that he's no longer on that roster. And now in Brooklyn, he has the potential to, you know, make things potentially worse there as well. So I think that's an issue. And that's certainly what I'm looking out for.
Yeah, and considering that Kevin Durant is going to be coming back next season, like, how much does he have to, I don't know, respect seems like a strong word, but how much does he actually have to respect his teammates? How much does he actually have to lift them up, understanding that Kyrie Irving or that Kevin Durant's going to walk through that door next season and kind of be the best player on the team, and now all of a sudden he's going to be deferring to him? It's an interesting dynamic to watch, and, you know, obviously something Brooklyn Nets fans are worried about, but I think that the Jazz are a good test for Kyrie to see really how healthy he was because, you know, the Hawks are a really bad team. They have one of the worst defenses in the league, one of the worst offenses in the league. They had no business being like they got blown out by 20 points for a reason by a Brooklyn Nets team that's sub 500 right now. But Utah is not sub 500. They have maybe the best rim protector in the league, or the second best rim protector in the league, depending on, you know, where, how close you are to Utah, I guess, and if you just listen to this show for David Locke. But Rudy Gobert is a problem for guys like Kyrie Irving, who make a living. Kyrie's a great shooter, but he wants to get to the rim, right? He wants to razzle dazzle, crisscross, and get to the basket. And if Rudy Gobert is standing there, that makes it a lot more difficult. So I think this will be a much better test to see just where Kyrie Irving is coming off of, you know, that shoulder situation, and it'll certainly be a much better test than the Hawks were. But that's tonight. I think that's the headlining game of tonight. I don't really think that there's that tonight's slate is necessarily all that great. The Warriors and the Mavericks play. To me, that's maybe the other game worth watching. The Rockets and Grizzlies could actually be pretty interesting tonight. I was just in Memphis and watched the Grizzlies. They've won a bunch of games. They're actually in, if the playoffs started today, they would be in it for the Western Conference. So that could be an interesting matchup too. But that's all we have for today. Remember to listen to and subscribe to Locked On NBA on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. For David Ramil, I'm Wes Goldberg, and this has been Locked On NBA.